All right, Chichos, did you know that scientists now openly say that your gut is the cornerstone of your health? And it's not just about digestion, okay? The gut literally affects everything from your energy levels to mood to weight management and even your longevity. However, an imbalanced microbiome can sneakily sabotage you with constant bloating, sluggish energy, and those stubborn extra pounds that you just can't lose no matter what. But here's the kicker. Fixing your gut bacteria isn't rocket science. It is the game changer for reclaiming your vibe and living your best damn life. And that is where Bioma steps in, delivering powerhouse supplements like their flagship probiotics for killer digestion and weight control, the Feminine Health Symbiotic to keep things balanced down there, and menopause support to crush hot flashes and mood swings. Their science-backed trio of prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics work like a gut reset button, all in vegan, tasteless capsules with a no BS 14-day money-back guarantee so you can try it risk-free, okay? So go to gobioma.com/adulttrial today for an extra 15% off your order. That is GOBIOMA.com/adulttrial and get an extra 15% off. An addiction to chaos is a child who learned it's the only way to feel alive. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show who realized in 2018 that the reason that I kept finding myself in one relationship after the next with emotionally unavailable alcoholics, despite being sober myself, was because my childhood screwed me up a whole hell of a lot more than I initially thought. And that despite years of therapy, years of working the 12 steps, I was suffering from complex PTSD. And if you want to hear all the nitty-gritty details of my story, go back to the very beginning of the podcast, listen to the first 8 or so episodes. I promise that you'll be entertained. So welcome aboard this hot mess of a healing ship. So today, we are diving deep with trauma specialist and coach Amy Fiedler. Many of y'all probably follow her on Instagram. If not, many of y'all have probably come across her content before, whether you know it or not. I'm constantly seeing her content shared in various subreddits and Facebook groups. She puts some really good shit out there. She's one of us. She's an adult child of an alcoholic and dysfunctional family. And we're covering quite a lot of ground in this interview, folks. Okay, this has something for everyone. We aim to please around here. We're talking about how to disengage from the chaos and denial of your dysfunctional family. We're talking about how to navigate relationship triggers. We're talking about how the hell to navigate a healthy relationship for the first damn time in your life. But I think what is especially useful in this conversation is the discussion around boundaries, especially considering the holidays are here. I think that the discussion around boundaries is often very oversimplified because here's the deal. Boundaries aren't just a communication skill. They are a nervous system skill. Those of us who grew up in homes where we experienced relational trauma, what was modeled to us was not healthy boundaries. What was modeled to us and what we experienced was boundary violations. So the boundary system that we developed was not built on self-worth and safety, but rather built around the coping mechanisms that we developed in response to these boundary violations, built around the coping mechanisms we needed to survive. And that is why boundaries aren't just like a simple action that you take or a perfect script that you say. If your body is hijacked by your past, by your childhood, your no or any boundary that you set will collapse in a moment. So in this episode, Amy shares a clear trauma-informed boundary technique that you can start using right away, immediately, so that your limits are clear, calm, and enforceable. So on that note, let's get the damn show on the road. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to DM the Join Shit Show, my online support community where we have 6 weekly Zoom support groups where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal. Y'all, we cannot heal this shit in isolation, okay? Being a part of a community, a healing community, those that are on the same damn journey as you are, is not just important and helpful, it is an absolutely vital and necessary aspect of this healing journey. Because as I say before, this is relational trauma. We heal relational trauma in safe relationships, and this is the place where you can do so for less than a damn dollar a day. And so if you're looking for a community that is actually fun to be a part of, then look no further than the damn shit show, okay? So you, yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever. You know what, guys? We just had somebody join this week. I think it was Melissa. She just damned the join after listening to the podcast for a couple of days. I told her, I said, it usually takes people a couple of years. So you, yes, the person that's been wanting to join for a couple of years, let's use Melissa as our inspiration and let's damn the join already, okay? Let's just do it already. See the link in the show notes, or you can go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta and TikTok at adultchildpod. Subscribe to my newsletter. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, 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 please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. All right, y'all. Well, we're in for a damn treat. We have, well, first I want to say, creator of banging social media content, mom, coach, trauma specialist. You probably follow her, Amy Fiedler. Welcome. Yes.
Thank you.
Buckle up.
Andrea. So yes, happy Andrea. To be here.
My very first podcast episode, I made sure to point that out. Like, whatever you do, just don't call me Andrea. Because then my last name really is Ashley. That's the other thing too, is like, I'm terrified that people, sorry if you're one of these people, I'm already going to offend people, but I'm terrified that people think I'm one of those people that's using their middle name as their last name.
I mean, listen, the thought crossed my mind, but also it's, you just have two first names and it's.
I do. And people say never trust somebody with two first names.
Really? I've never heard that before.
Yeah. I keep having guys on dating apps tell me that. So maybe that's just a thing.
All right.
This is where I like to start. Okay.
Okay.
Tell me the moment that you realized your childhood screwed you up more than you thought it did.
I was 15. No, for real. I really knew things were not right, and it was really messing with me when I was 15 years old, and I was suicidal, and I expressed that to my mother, and she reacted to me saying, I no longer want to be here, with, I didn't raise you. Imagine her screaming, though. I'm not going to scream. I didn't raise you to say things like that. And I was just like, I'm telling you, I'm unwell. And she just escalated and escalated and escalated. And it was just this immediate knowing of like, I am not okay. It is because of this environment. I need to speak to someone outside of this environment. May I go to therapy? And she was like, yes, but don't tell your father. He will think you're crazy. And I was like, the punches just keep coming. So yeah, that is probably the most vivid, pivotal moment in my life. The one I always go back to, the moment where I was like, I'm seeing everything clearly here and it is not okay. And it's really taking a toll on me.
What a blessing that there was a part of you that knew in that moment, like, this isn't me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about that a lot, honestly. I don't know how, because I grew up around alcoholism, and as we were just chatting, you are familiar with. And when you grow up in that environment, there's so much lying, gaslighting. You don't know what is real and what is not, especially if you have somebody in such denial and is functioning day to day. So being a child to that, you are like, I'm getting blamed for everything, I'm getting screamed at, and everybody in this environment is telling me I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm a bitch, I should keep my mouth shut, I'm making problems, I'm a hormonal teenager, or whatever the case may be. And you feel legit crazy. So I think often, I don't know what that was inside of me, but I did have it, thankfully.
So that did you start going to therapy then?
I did. I started going to therapy. I didn't enjoy conventional types of therapy, but I did it for many years. I was immediately put on medication. I always tat and I told this on my podcast when I first started talking about my own story. The first therapist I saw kind of just handed me a workbook that he handed everybody when you walked through the door and was like, "Here, go home and fill this out." And then I remember a few sessions in, he was like, "Can we bring your parents in?" And I was like, "I'm here because I can't talk to them at home. I'm here to be able to talk to somebody who has a sound mind, who is a little more grounded and outside of that environment. No, we cannot bring them in." Also, you recognize I just told you that one of them would call me crazy. So that's harmful to me. And luckily, that never transpired, but I didn't have the best of experiences. It was more, I was a teenager. This was what I was offered and set up with through my parents. So that was all I could do up until the point where I was a little bit older. And then I started exploring alternative treatments, starting with a psychic and going a more spiritual route, which quite frankly helped me significantly for many years until it didn't. And then I started exploring, other ways, and then eventually kind of ended up in this field myself.
So, before we go into adulthood, I'd love to hear more about your upbringing. So, do you have siblings?
I do have siblings. I'm the middle child of three, so I have an older sister and a younger brother.
And what role were you? The scapegoat?
You know what's so interesting about this is I don't think I played one
Mm-hmm.
role all the
I think that's
time,
common.
right?
We can switch.
Yeah. So for a long time I was the scapegoat, and there were times where I was the only one saying there's alcohol hidden there, so and so is drunk, this is what's happening, like speaking the truth of the situation. I have forever in my life, probably up until I'm 40 now, so probably up until a few years ago, have always played the role of like everybody's kind of counselor, the middleman, the peacekeeper, the one everybody comes to. But there's a lot of triangulation in our family dynamics, so it's always me kind of getting along with everybody and having good relationships because I like to communicate. And them not communicating with each other. So, everybody kind of filtering something through me for many years, me trying to fix things for other people. So, playing that role of fixer. But yeah, I mean, it depends on the day, scapegoat, fixer, you name it, I played it.
How do you remember when you realized that alcohol was a problem, like in the family? Like, was it something that was discussed ever, or it was something that you intuitively picked up on?
It was never, until we got older, I would say it was never openly discussed. It's still not technically discussed, which is why I don't heavily name who and what and what's going on. But because there's enabling, that takes place, and it takes two to tango, so there's one in denial. And I was the young kid saying, "I didn't do anything wrong. There's something else causing this person to scream in my face obscenities," right? And then there was a period of my life where I would say it was probably while I was in college when I would like come home on breaks where I played seek and find and would take photos of the stash or the hidden, glass of wine where people literally thought they were pulling one over on you, and you were like, "I know the cup you hide it in, and I know where you hide it. on the counter, but it was never when I would call it out or I would say it. Like I tell people I was a very ballsy child. I had no qualms about just getting in your face and speaking truth. And I think that came from being so consumed by people in denial and lies and all of that. I just can't tolerate, to this day, I have zero tolerance. Just be direct and be honest. I'm a very direct person. And I was that way from a young age. So I would get face to face with the individual and say, "You're drunk, and here is your stash." And they would look me down in the eye and go, "This is water." And then they'd dump it down the sink while staring at me. And I'd be like, "Am I crazy? What? Just,
Oh, girl.
that's not water, right?" And so, yeah. So there was never an in, there were accidents as we got older. There were accidents in the house, injuries that would take place, not just somebody falling down a flight of stairs type of thing and getting severely injured. And because they drank and didn't eat. And I lived in the house much longer than my siblings. And I didn't feel like I could leave because I didn't feel like it was safe to leave when I would see what was going on. But for many of those accidents, I was single-handedly the one witnessing it, having to step in because I had one parent frozen like deer in the headlights, the other one in denial, even though they're laying on the floor bleeding. And me having to go, "Okay, can you move your legs and arms? We're going to call 911 now." And then getting berated and screamed at in that process. So I always was the one calling it out and naming it. I was also the one having to clean up the mess, pull the body off the floor, dial 911, secretly tell the paramedics no food is in her stomach, kind of thing.
God, I relate to a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for my dad had me at like 8 years old, like searching the house for booze with him.
Well, no, we did that as well. I wouldn't say at 8, but there were moments where it was a joint effort to locate stuff, and then there were moments where just us siblings would go searching for it and then point it out to someone. And it depended on the day whether someone was on our team or not.
Yeah, and then it's like pointless, right? It's like
Yes.
you. So I'm curious, was there a pivotal moment for you where you realized that there was nothing you could do?
You know, that's a really tough one, if I'm being honest with you, because I think little by little, layer by layer over the years, in certain ways, yeah, I do remember having to get to a certain point with that mindset when I was like, it's time for me to leave this house and move out completely. I was able to, I could afford it for quite some time. It was more so, I'm scared of what will happen to you if I go, but the toxicity and the stress of living there really took a toll on my health. And so eventually I was like, I have to kind of separate physically from this. I cannot live my life to save and rescue people who do not want to save themselves. And that, you know, was eye-opening, but that took a lot of time. And then even when I separated, there were like these layers in between where I would visit a couple times a week because I lived maybe 20, 30 minutes away, and it wasn't received well, right? And or I got a lot of pushback. And so it started more distance where I was then maybe checking in once a week, maybe checking in every other week. So as the years have gone on, and now that I have my own family, right? And my own child, the boundaries have shifted majorly in terms of what I will show up for, what I will endure, what I will listen to, what I will participate in are vastly different. But yeah, it's like everyone always compares it, and so do I, to an onion, but it's like peeling the
That's never,
tiny.
never ending.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and also because, I mean, at least for me, it's like these behaviors were all I knew. It was so It was so deeply uncomfortable for me to disengage. It was so deeply uncomfortable for me to not want to know everything that was going on. You know, like I wanted to know all of the juicy details just because that's the way it had always been. Not to mention, too, I really feel like my first, so I'm sober 17 years. I really feel like my first addiction was like to the chaos and dysfunction within my home. Like I would sit on the steps and listen to my parents fight and almost get like an adrenaline rush from it. And so it was really deeply, viscerally unsettling to disengage from all of that. And the way that I like to describe it now is that and it sounds like you're maybe in a similar boat, is that I no longer participate in the family dysfunction, but I also don't participate in the family denial. So like the way I describe it is like I, when appropriate, it's like I no longer try to carry the elephant out of the room, but I'm also not going to ignore that the elephant's in the room.
I actually made merch many years ago that says something about pointing out the elephant in the room, 'cause I cannot be in a space where we're all pretending this is not happening. And we're seeing the behavior, and we're just sm because certain people want to do that. They want to just plaster a smile and be able to get on with their day and push things aside. But as I think they've aged, the behavior has gotten more pronounced and more in your face and more erratic because they can't hide it the way they used to anymore. And physically, they're declining, so it shows up in really in your face sort of ways. And like I said, like I mean I, and this happens even, like one sibling has kids, my other sibling does not, and it happens differently for all of us. For me, after having my son, I was like, my tolerance solo is one thing. My tolerance as a mother and allowing him to be exposed to something is vastly different. And that was so fascinating to me because I was like, wowie me, like the shit you will put up with. Because like you said, like you get addicted to that chaos. It's all you know. So that's how you're wired. So I for a long time, and like I said, even in recent years, I would say up until having him, things drastically changed in many different ways. But I would get, I'd get phone calls throughout the day or night. And we always knew if you were getting a phone call after a certain hour, you probably don't pick it up. It's not going to go well. And there were too many instances after having my son where I'm newly postpartum. I'm a brand new mom. I'm running a business. I'm doing all of these things. My fiance travels ton for work. He works in entertainment. And then I'm getting a phone call with someone screaming and crying, and I am scared because I'm your daughter and I want to help. And then within seconds of me taking action to help while wrangling all these things in my own life, you attack me. You name call me. You tell me to mind my business. Everything's fine. And then you shut off your phone. And I've got to call Nate. And so you bring that toxicity into my home now, and that then ripples out to my child. That's not okay with me. So now that, like the investment that I had in jumping to help and save and rescue and or even just support, so different now. Now it's just like this natural, like, whoop, like a light switch goes off and you go, okay. You want to do that to yourself. So lay on the ground and suffer, and or I'll just call 911 next time instead of a neighbor.
Was there, when you really started changing how you participate in the system, was there like reactive abuse
From the
from them, like
individual,
from the
I
family?
don't.
Like, yeah, like when you no longer participated in the way that you once did, was there a lot of pushback?
I wouldn't say pushback. What I would say is confusion, like people still functioning the way they had always functioned, not knowing I had changed my mind and the boundaries changed, right? Up until they're met with, even recently. Like I would say, my brother, sister, and I are all in similar but different places with this now that we're, two of us are in our 40s, one almost in his 40s. And so we're all in a similar place, but you can see one by one how we all shift a little bit differently. And so I tend to get somewhere, maybe I won't say first sometimes, but let's say recently I got somewhere first with a mindset of like, I just want to have pleasant interactions. And the minute it turns, handle it yourself. It's not my problem anymore. You live on your own, you pay your bills. You're doing the same thing you've always done. You're a fully functioning adult somehow, some way. So none of this is my problem, right? I just want to have a nice interaction so I can sleep well at night and go on with my life. I have no investment in anything else. Whereas there's one sibling that is extremely hurt and they get very emotional and very distraught and very upset still about certain things, where I'm in a place where I've just accepted the limitations, right, of both parents. And it's just like, well, I don't know why you're expecting them to be different. This is how they've always been. And then, and then the other siblings sometimes might, lean too far into the avoidance category and then pop back in. And so we're all just kind of constantly shifting. And I would say we're all aware of each other's shifts. So sometimes there's a little bit of annoyance of like, why is this one not participating more? Or why is this one still so upset when the other two are not? But more or less, we all tend to find alignment at certain points and come back together. But that's taken decades, I would say. Childhood, I remember at least my recollection of things was me always getting blamed for wanting to voice, whereas the other two were like, Amy, because I was mouthy and I was direct with people, and so it was very easy to just point the finger at me and go, you started it with her. And I'm like, nah, I didn't. So yeah, I hope that answers that
100%.
question.
I'm curious. One thing I've, realized about myself from, having a career that's focused on all these issues is that there's a part of me that really intellectualizes like my parents and an understanding that they're, sick and wounded, but that I think prevents me in a way from really feeling the grief and the sadness that really is ultimately underneath that. And I'm curious
Sure.
if you've had a similar experience.
Totally. I've totally had that experience. And honestly, I look at it in certain ways now as like, this is survival for me to just make sense of the behavior. But for a long time, I would say that was my way of being able to continue tolerating it. If I made sense of it, if I understood it, my patterning was always to over-empathize and excuse it. And I'm usually, like I said, the go-to for when there's a problem, everybody calls me because I'm very calm and I'm able to be more soft-spoken and I don't have outbursts. And because my entire childhood was me red in the face, screaming until I was almost going to pass out because I was in complete chaos. So now that I'm older, I'm like, I have the tools to navigate this. And, but yeah, there are times where I have found that I just almost rationalize it away and then don't have to feel the pain or the grief or the sadness. You know what? It hits me more now as a mom
I was just going to bring that
because
up, like, yeah.
I see how I am with my son, and I don't like my memories of childhood, while my parents, and this is what's so confusing when people hear me talk about this. My parents were amazing in a million different ways. They always provided for us. I would say, in many ways, you could say I was probably spoiled. Disney vacations during the summer, like dance competition, like I competitively danced my whole childhood. But at home, it was hell. There was no peace at home. And I was just, be I became an adult who was used to people screaming and yelling in my face, was used to being called stupid, was used to this day, even with my fiance, I'll be like, am I annoying you? Am I annoying you? Like, I'm reading his expressions constantly. And he's like, no, what do you mean? He's like, I just have resting bitch face. Like, you have resting bitch face. You mean, like, I'm just, what do you mean? And I'm like, yeah, you don't understand. Like, my father would tell me that I had nothing interesting to say, and he would get annoyed when I wanted, I'm a little girl, I want to be told I look beautiful, or, and I had a mother who would insert herself and be very controlling and be like, tell her you love her, tell her you love her. And to this day, that still happens, in even with the distance. So as a mom, I see how I am naturally calm with my son. And even when he's upset, even when he's throwing a tantrum, I mean, now he's almost two, so he like hurls his body on the floor absolutely for no reason. He's there. And I have the ability and the capacity in my body to be like, okay, bud, come here. Just give me a hug. And I just think to myself, oh, and that breaks me every time, like instant tears, because I'm like, that's what I needed so badly as a kid. And I didn't get that. I got yelled at and shamed. And maybe there were fleeting moments of that. But if the majority of the time I was getting something else, that is what I remember.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, right? It's like it doesn't cancel each other out or outweigh each other.
It's whatever was the most consistent, you know? And when people say, well, I make mistakes sometimes, and you're like, you made it a million times a day, every day. And even when someone approached you and named it and said, this hurts me, you said, sorry, get over it, and then did it again and again and again. And decades later, sorry means nothing. There's no behavioral change. And you, if you want that person in your life, you find ways to protect and preserve and support yourself while also trying to, touch base with them and have some sort of connection, even if it's disappointing most days.
So when it sounds like, you were on a healing journey for starting at 15, but was there a moment for you where you realized that this was complex trauma?
The countdown is on, shit shows. Holiday shopping season is officially here, and Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't find anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind. Let me tell you about something that I recently found for a friend of mine. It is a birth month gemstone and flower candle. So she is also a January birthday like me. So it's garnet and the smell is carnation, flowers, herbs, crystals, and essential oils all coming together in this really beautiful candle. And as I've said before, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms to dads to kids and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. I mean it. So don't wait. Cross those damn names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/adultchild. That's uncommongoods.com/adultchild for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. All right, shit shows, did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common nutritional gaps? It affects 1 in 3 adults, and especially women. It often shows up as fatigue, brain fog, weakness, brittle nails, but the problem is that most people don't realize that low iron may be the cause of these issues. That's why I'm here to tell you about Siderol from Pharma Nutra. This is a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while also avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea, constipation, and all that fun stuff. It is clinically proven to be comparable to IV iron and is formulated with just 2 ingredients, iron and vitamin C. It's vegan, allergen-free, gluten-free. You can take it anytime, anywhere. So if you're that 1 out of 3 with an iron deficiency, head to pharmanutra-us.com and use code ADULTCHILD for 10% off your first order. That is pharmanutra-us.com, promo code ADULTCHILD for 10% off today. All right, Shisha, so I have been talking to you about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormonal levels with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, with 98% of them saying they would recommend it to somebody else. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their probiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings. It helps you feel satisfied longer, boost your energy. It helps to relieve occasional gas and bloating, reduce sugar cravings, keeps you feeling satisfied longer, boost your energy, and helps you stabilize those damn mood swings. And because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. And so I struggle with brain fog. I'm sure many of y'all can relate. And since I've been taking the prebiotic collagen protein, I've noticed a big difference there, as well as just a lift in my overall energy levels. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows, folks. So right now you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order today with code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That is happymammoth.com. Use code ADULTCHILD to get 15% off today.
Yeah, when I actually started getting my trauma certification, I was like, I've never been formally diagnosed with this, which I now in my career have learned most therapists are not trained mm-hmm. in trauma. That's a continuing education sort of deal for them. And like I was diagnosed as a teenager with severe depression, severe anxiety, OCD. My OCD was my way of dealing with my anxiety. It was the only way I could cope with it. And like I said, medicated. So nobody came in and said, you have trauma. I pieced that one together myself and then was like, oh, the system sort of failed me there. Cause what did I have to tell you was happening in my life for someone to name it so I could maybe get proper support, which drives me to this day, because that is the majority of clientele that come to me. Mm-hmm. Years of therapy.
Nobody names it. Yep.
Nobody names it. And or it's named and explained, but no coping tools, no action steps. No, here's what can help you. Let me, you know, connect the dots for you so you know how to actually function in this relationship in spite of it. Like just being told, hey, you have trauma, really doesn't do anything other than feel a little validating for a split second. But to help me understand it and help me understand how it's working in my life now and help me understand what to do with it, which is, like I said, what drives me and is what I'm passionate about now.
Yeah, I spent, you know, years and years and years having no clue that what I was experiencing in romantic relationships was complex PTSD. Like absolutely no clue. It was like, as soon as I would enter a relationship, date two or three, or as soon as my abandonment wound gets triggered just slightly.
Don't
My peace,
I
it's just a little, just don't text me back for about an hour and I'm good. And then I'm hooked, right? And then I'm
Yep.
like no longer gathering information to decide whether or not you're the right person for me. Like I'm in it to win it. Like this is it,
Yeah.
baby. And then just like living in an emotional flashback 24/7. But it sounds like you too, that the main way that this was showing up in your life was in romance.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that obviously it started just relationally within the family dynamics. But and I find it so fascinating, but for some reason from a very young age I was just like obsessed with like romantic relationships, and like I need a boyfriend, I need to be chosen was like what I would say for a period of time in my life. And then, I remember when I first started like reading things online, right? And people were just starting to post about stuff like this on social media. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I need to like write down like what I want in a partner. And mine was so, it's so sad. Mine was just
Let's
like,
hear
I
it.
just want someone to pick me. Like I just want someone to choose me. And like, in hindsight it makes sense, 'cause I didn't feel important, I didn't feel heard, I didn't feel seen, I didn't feel acknowledged, I didn't feel validated. I didn't feel any of those things as a child. If anything, I felt constantly dismissed and demeaned and shamed and judged and all of that. And I wanted someone not just to physically stay, 'cause like my dad would be there. He was always there. My parents are married for 40 plus years, but he wasn't ever there. Like, he wasn't emotionally there. He wasn't engaged in the relationship with you. And that's how he is in general with most people. And though my mom has subscribed to that, that doesn't mean that I should have to. And then on the flip side, my mom was very different. She was very engaged. She was very much like affectionate and telling you she loved you. But like I said, would interject herself or like insert herself in the relationship we had with our dad. And she'd be like, tell her you love her. Tell her she's pretty. And I directly, a million times, would be like, that doesn't make me feel pretty. That doesn't mean he actually wants to say it. He just is complying to shut you up. And that makes me walk away feeling 100 times worse. Questioning my appearance, questioning my worth, questioning my value, questioning all these things. And I can't make sense of why, other than seeing this relationship in front of me, why I then latched on to I need somebody to want me and need me. But I mean, from that point on, you name it, every relationship was abusive in some way, shape, or form. And it just got worse as the years went on, even though I was figuring things out. And this is what a lot of people will talk to me about as well. They end up in one or two, and then they get some help and they go, okay, the next one I'll do better. And they don't realize how this shows up in their relationships. And it's sneaky. Trauma is sneaky, and you get activated by little things and hooked into behavior patterns you won't even know exist until you're stuck in something incredibly unsafe. I mean, even after years of working through it, I remember getting on dating apps and started dating people and ended up in the most precarious of situations. And was in hindsight, was like, I don't know how I survived that, And what started as just emotional abuse would turn into emotional and sexual and anything else. And then you get to this place where you're like, enough, enough. But yeah, I mean, it never showed up in friendships. I had good friendships. That's the
That was my
craziest
experience
thing
as
to me.
well. And it didn't make sense. And the one thing that didn't make sense to me was consciously, I thought that I was somebody with high self-esteem,
And I didn't understand why all of that just like completely went out the window, like as soon as I entered a relationship. Did you have a type? Just emotionally unavailable?
I had a type like it, and if I'm being honest with you, it was always like this narcissistic, like they were very well off in ways. I don't know what my obsession with that was, and I don't necessarily know if I had one, quite frankly. I just ended up with men and a series of men who were very well off, usually had their own businesses, very, very successful, and leveraged that power and that control, not just in that environment, but obviously in this environment. I don't know if I felt some sort of power in myself having a powerful man in my eyes next to me. I mean, they were clearly not powerful. They were clearly very insecure and very weak. But yeah, for decades, that, which is funny because like I mean, it started that way. I would say in high school, I wouldn't say necessarily my first boyfriend was like abusive or toxic by any means, right? Those younger relationships really for me were not, but I was very immature and very insecure and all that. Even my college relationships were not necessarily that. It really took a turn, I would say, after college, my toxicity, which my and I think people have a hard time admitting this. Like, I was toxic, but I was toxic because I was traumatized and I had grown up in such an unsafe, chaotic environment. This is all I knew how to do relationally with people. And I didn't see myself that way. I didn't see myself that way at all. I saw myself as put together, having it all figured out. And then once, moving through those relationships, looking back, being like, oh, that poor man.
Takes two to tango.
It takes two to tango, but then it was like, then I chose partners that were that I thought were great, right? And then ended up being equally, if not more, I would say, toxic than me. And so it made me feel more put together, made me feel more grounded and more regulated to see them worse in many ways, more emotionally mature in many ways. And it wasn't until those ended where I had to take a look at myself and be like, you were just as bad. You maybe didn't do this or say this, but you in many ways had immature tendencies.
Was there an awareness or understanding of why like you kept finding yourself in these relationships, or was there like a moment that you realized like this is childhood rooted?
I knew for a long time that I had issues
You had a broken
with,
picker. Yeah.
yeah, I had issues with romantic relationships. I didn't trust myself. I also had no, and this is heavily where I shaped the what I do with clients off of. I had no foundational skills. I had no semblance of boundaries at all. I wasn't raised with boundaries. I was raised in an obedient household. It was just do as we tell you to do and like speak when you're spoken to. Your no meant nothing, especially if they were going to override you. So I didn't have it modeled to me. I didn't have it taught to me. I didn't even know the word, quite frankly. So when I look back on all of these relationships, I think to myself, well, hell, you were doing the best you could, because like now, boundaries are the solid foundation you stand on that allow you to know how to show up in that relationship and what to do in those situations where something does not align with what you value. I had no idea what to do in those situations. So everything was just reactive and controlling and manipulative on my end, because that's what I was shown and taught. growing up. So there was always this knowledge of, I've got an issue here, but never the complete understanding that this is what I was lacking. I single-handedly with myself had to figure that out. Like I had to reach the place where I went, there's got to be a formula for this because nobody was teaching me. I'd go to therapist after therapist. Nobody sat me down and said, you need boundaries, Amy, or you need to learn how to advocate for yourself. And here's how you successfully do that without fearing abandonment, backlash, or conflict, or punishment, or any of that stuff. Nobody did that for me. And I went to a lot of people. If anything, I ended up with people trying to support me, doing the best they could, and they were only one notch improved in terms of toxicity from my family. So it was just trauma, 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 trauma until I was like, okay, I'm gonna single-handedly rescue myself here.
Yeah, it does just it piles on top of each other, right?
Yeah.
And then you just bring it into the next relationship. I think it's interesting when you bring up boundaries because I mean it would be great if it was like as simple as just set this boundary, but if we have a nervous system that doesn't feel safe doing so, like that's really impossible, you know?
I mean, and that's the other thing. Like when I said earlier about foundational skills, like and not just understanding like the actionable steps you need, but like to understand what's happening in your body is crucial to then being able to take those action steps. So like you're saying, if somebody doesn't understand, this is not just, yes, you can label it anxiety, but it's also coming through you because you are activated. And you are activated because there's some sort of sensory input happening, sending signals to your nervous system that there's a threat here. And there might not be, and this is my clientele, there might not be anymore an actual threat in front of you. This person might be really safe, but something, like I said about my fiance, something subtle they're doing is taking your nervous system back to a time and place where that behavior was not safe for you. And then there's a way to deal with that. And it's not just single-handedly like you managing it yourself. Sometimes it is inserting some sort of regulation tool or a somatic tool. And other times it warrants having a conversation once you are able to get grounded. But if you don't have this knowledge to bridge this gap. And I didn't have that. Like I learned that through educating myself to be able to do what I do for a living. That's how I learned it. I didn't learn it from a therapist even teaching it to me. So when you don't have that, most people don't, you're not going to know how to set a boundary, or you're going to do your damnedest to try to, and then you're going to sit in front of me and go, but I'm scared, or I always get backlash, and so I Amy, I've repeated it 5 times and they just keep doing it, and you're like, okay, so let's fill in these gaps for you, right? It's not you repeating it over and over really defeats the purpose of the boundary being there, because the boundary is more for you than for them. You're just letting them know there's a line in the sand here, but you have to follow through on it. And in order for you to be able to do that, you really got to understand yourself.
And then also to like one of the things I've had to come to terms with is with like boundaries is at a certain point is when is my attempt at trying to set a boundary really like false hope that this person can show up any differently, you know?
Yeah, I have a strategy for
Yeah,
that
let's hear it.
one. Well, so I have this 3-3-3 strategy that I teach people, because most people who have been through trauma, they can do one of two things when they're trying to set
The
boundaries.
audio just got quiet. I don't know what.
I don't know. Can you hear me now?
Not very loud.
I don't know what happened. Nothing changed. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. It's just quiet. It's
Oh.
weird. That's good. Now I can hear you.
Okay. Maybe it was my hair. People with trauma do one of two things. They either cut people off too quickly, post-trauma, they'll cut people off too quickly because they're scared and they're activated and they go, oh, that's a red flag. I'm not doing that again. And there's just no balance happening. So it's them functioning and thinking in extremes. Or they go the complete opposite direction and they over tolerate, they over empathize, they excuse the behavior, they keep trying, they talk over talk, all that stuff. And the goal here is to find that balance and get them to that gray area where they can entertain nuance in a situation. And so that's where I insert my 333 strategy. So when you're setting a boundary with somebody else, watching, first of all, communicate the boundary no more than three times. And in many situations, you're not even going to need to communicate it three times. It might be one, it might be two. But when you are communicating it, you are then going to follow through on that boundary. So match your actions to your words always, all three of those times that you communicate it, make sure you follow through. So if I tell you I will not be spoken with that way, I'm going to communicate that and then I'm going to disengage if you continue to show you this is the boundary. There's a consequence for you continuing to overstep it. And then the third thing is you're watching for three behaviors once you communicate and you follow through. Are they genuinely remorseful and apologetic that they've overstepped or breached that boundary? Right? Do they take accountability? And following that moment that you've pointed it out to them, you've communicated and you've followed through on that boundary, do they make steps and make progress changing? So, do they do something different the second time or do they repeat that same behavior? And if you follow this formula, what happens for most people is immediately within the second time of them going to reinforce that boundary, they go, this person is just repeating a pattern over and over. They don't hear me. This helps people, the people I work with, really bridge that gap between those two extreme types of behaviors. So they stop over tolerating and they stop prematurely cutting people off and they find that middle ground where they're like, okay, wait, this person is just slow to grow. They needed a second, but look, they are taking accountability. They understand what they've done and what they need to do differently, and they're implementing it. And that's a sign of growth. And that's what we have to learn in relationships, that it's not this all or nothing. Boundaries are not these extreme things where we go, do this or else. It's, hey, this makes me feel safe. This makes me feel supported. If you can't do that, that's fine. But then we're not going to engage the same way anymore, or our relationship is going to adjust. And I'm okay with that because I understand and really rooted in why I have this boundary to begin with.
Now, what about for the person who they set the boundary, the person is unable to follow through. There's no signs of, trying to take action. And for the part of them that feels like, well, this means that I'm not good enough.
That is a deeper level of work that you have to kind of reconcile, because the truth is that number one, that shows me that there is a level of emotional and behavioral responsibility you feel for other people, and you're attaching your worth to what they do or they do not do. And usually, I won't say this is for everybody, but usually when you put the shoe on the other foot and you go, hey, if we turn the tables here, would you say that because you told this person, no, I can't show up to dinner on time, or I'm not able to communicate in the way that you're needing or as often as you're needing, would you say it's because they don't deserve it? Or would you say it's because there's a limit on your end? It doesn't work for you. You're not capable of giving that to them for X, Y, and Z reasons. And for most people, and I've learned this especially in my own life with very difficult family relationships, that's one thing that will often break through to someone who is incredibly resistant. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to ever change their behavior, but you can get this glimmer of awareness in somebody and a little bit of an aha when you turn the tables. But the self-worth component is, I mean, a couple layers here. It's a lack of self-trust. It's, trauma that needs processing. Somebody has either told you or shown you over a period of time in your life that you weren't, I mean, I was outright told you're not deserving of X, Y, and Z, or, being name called, anything like that, which all layers onto my self-esteem and my self-worth. And learning to have healthy emotional boundaries with yourself. I'm not responsible for what other people are feeling, and healthy behavioral boundaries. I'm not responsible for what other people are doing. I don't control other people. That belief that I can really connects directly to this belief that if they can't do this, I must be less than, or I'm not deserving. Which I had that belief system in romance for God knows how long, where it was like, what's wrong with me? Why won't, it was always me. Why, what's wrong with me? And never this understanding of, hold on, I value this, I want this, and I need this, and this is what I do. I take clients out of that belief system and I go straight to, let's identify what you value and why behaviorally. Let's identify that. And let's really understand the why. And the why is what happens to me mentally, emotionally, physically, and relationally when I am exposed to this behavior, either this positive behavior or this negative behavior. And when we get a full picture of the emotional landscape and the behavioral landscape of exposure to this. So, what happens to me when I'm exposed to somebody who can't consistently communicate with me when I'm getting to know them? What happens to me? I feel anxious. I get more needy, right? Da, 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 da. And how does that ripple out into my life and my relationships and my work and my conversations? How does that impact me physically throughout the day? I mean, it would cripple me. It would cripple me. I was, and then I would obsess about it. Why are they not talking to me? And then you go, well, maybe if I just text them something a little bit more interesting, they'll respond. Or maybe if I entice them, they'll respond. Or you go the other direction and you kind of sulk about it and you go, why? What's wrong with me? Blah, blah, blah. When you are really connected and you have that understanding of that whole emotional landscape, and you're doing this from a grounded place, mind you, then it changes the game and it changes the mindset. Because when you go into situations, and this is what starts to shift that belief system for people, when you go into that situation the next time, you go, I need this. It's no longer about why can't they give it to me? It's now I value this and I have a complete understanding why. And so that builds that self-trust. Right. And it builds that confidence and it helps you stay really connected to yourself.
Lost it.
Whereas most people who are believing, what's wrong with me and it impact,
You're back. It just cut out
they're
for a
prone to
second.
that self-abandonment. Oh, it says my internet is unstable. I'm sorry about that. I don't know why.
You're good.
Connected. They're prone to self-abandonment. So they're prone to leaving and abandoning what they need, they want, and they value, and prioritizing, or pedestaling what somebody else wants or needs. Why am I not good enough for them? Well, wait a minute. Are they good enough for you? They're not meeting your need. That's wiring. That takes time, but I just kind of mapped out the like the inner workings of what I would do with somebody to get to that place to start to practice a new, or rewire, if you will.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to, at least this has been the case for me, to for me to think that, and I know that you have experience with this with like your fiance, but for me to think that I'm ever gonna be in a place where some of these parts of me, aren't gonna get triggered, or to think that there'll never be a time where a part of me is going to feel that feeling of like, oh, this might not, this must mean that I'm, not good enough, to think that any of that stuff is going to go away completely or show up every once in a while is like unrealistic. It's like these are such deeply entrenched wounds that are in my nervous system, but the volume on it can get turned down like so dramatically much. But to think that, some of this stuff is gonna, it's never gonna just completely like be the slate. The slate's not gonna be completely wiped clean ever. And so I'd love to hear about, 'cause the one thing that I talk about is, there's work that we can do alone, like with ourselves, but then there's the whole another layer of healing that occurs in relationship, like when we're getting triggered, when we're in the midst of it. It'd be really nice if we could just take a long sabbatical from of dating and just be single, and then just enter the dating world as if we were raised in a home where we were taught that we were unconditionally loved and inherently worthy, right? Wouldn't that be like
Yeah.
lovely?
So nice.
Yeah. So I'm curious to hear about your experience with dating your fiance, and were there moments of being deeply uncomfortable, and like, and how did you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yes, lots of discomfort, lots of it, because I hadn't truly known what safe, healthy dynamics look like outside of, like I said, friendship. So I never had a romantic partner who was gentle with me and, didn't dismiss me when I was upset or I had something to speak up about. Genuinely wanted to understand me and hear me and love me in spite of whatever had gone on in my past, right? And even there were layers here of like I didn't even know I had like sexual trauma until I was in this healthy relationship, and I didn't even know what was happening at times where I'd just suddenly burst into tears. It's wild, I think, to most people to realize that a lot of healing does take place in a safe and mind you, yes, right? If the problems are showing up in romance, then having a healthy, safe romantic partner is going to be healing on so many levels. But I want to also make people know that that doesn't mean that your friendships can't be healing in many ways relationally as well, right? Just because it's specific to romance doesn't mean those other things don't play a role. They absolutely do. But let me be clear, you're going to enter a romantic relationship after years of working through something, and you're still going to get triggered because that's just how triggers work. Some of them, yes, like lessen over time. And you learn different tools and ways to navigate them because you have that awareness now. And then there's going to be a million more that pop up that you didn't even know existed until you enter that safer relationship. And that's kind of what my experience has been, realizing that. And even watching, like we've been together years now, and I have watched myself grow in so many different ways from the start to where we are like 4.5 years in, me being able to see, wow, all of this was so triggering and so new to me at the start. And now I don't, it's not, I don't even, I'm not fazed by it. And some of it was so it's silly now to me,
Let's hear
but
some.
yeah. So some of it was I had, like I said, dated successful men, successful in their careers and their finances. And a lot of them leveraged, I got cheated on, I got lied to, all of that. And they leveraged their travel for work and their assistance, like to make me feel insecure and inferior and all of that. And really, I had major trust issues. To end up with somebody who works in entertainment, has to travel, mostly works around women. My mindset prior to meeting him was, I will never date a man who works with a female again, right? I will never, which is so extreme. And you're kind of like, well, how would that even work,
Yeah,
Amy?
what kind of jobs does this limit this
You're gonna
person to?
date a man that like works in a male prison or something? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who are you gonna date that doesn't have exposure to some type of female in their life? You're gonna have to either work through that or so something like that, right? I didn't
Male
have
prison.
the experience of a man in my life being committed to me and being able to have healthy, respectable female friendships and colleagues that I could feel comfortable with and not even flinch about. And so even just the first time I had to meet some of his friends, female or male, I was so desperately uncomfortable because I was like, who's a threat? Who's a threat? Who's a threat? Right? And like eyeing everybody up. And then early on in our relationship, he didn't travel as much. He didn't do certain things because he knew how uncomfortable I was. And he was trying to, build that trust and make sure I felt comfortable while also, and I give him credit, although it pissed me off at the time, holding strong boundaries with me, being like, this is my career. This is not going to change. So either get comfortable with it, and I am here to help you do that, or we'll have a conversation where we go our separate ways because I can't be a hermit and I can't not talk to these people or work with these people. And I was so activated in those moments that I didn't even have the words. I would have to step back, journal, work through it, and then come back with like a written and stand in front of him because I was so triggered that I had it written out from when I was calm. And I'd be like, okay, I think I figured out what would help me feel safer. If you communicate, if there's a check-in, if I feel included in some, like I had to really do some deep digging to understand what I needed. I didn't have anyone telling me that. So some of that stuff, right? Now it's not even, oh, who'd you talk to? Oh, who'd you have? It's not even a second thought. And so there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that with the traveling for work. Like, where are you going? Where are you staying? Who? Now I'm like, he'll be like, I have a flight on Friday. I go, oh, where? I also have a toddler now, so it's different. The mental bandwidth is not really, my capacity is different. So I can't remember everything, which is probably working for my benefit at this point. But yeah, those little things really, really weighed on me. And then, he grew up around me. We actually lived two roads away, but we
Oh.
didn't know each other. Or back then, we knew of each other's families. We didn't know each other directly. We met on a dating app, obviously, as adults years later, oddly enough. But he had long lived and worked in the city, and I didn't. I commuted to and from work in the city. Needless to say, when we got together, we lived down where I was for a while, and then we moved up to the city. And so his lifestyle was very like, I'm going on a walk at like 9 p.m. I gotta make a phone call. I'm gonna walk around the block, or I'm gonna go to the bodega or whatever. And I'm like, you're gonna what? Where are you going? No, I was like suspicious of everything. And we have successfully found ways to bridge gaps there for me to feel safe and to build that trust. And that's an ongoing process for me. When you don't grow up in a household, as with a stable environment, you don't have trusting adults or the example of a trusting relationship, you only have yourself. And so I trust myself infinitely, but when I got to deal with another person, every trigger in the book comes up. And so to this day, when there's a new experience, when there's anything, and there's not 4.5 years in, I won't say there's tons of new experiences, but even parenting, little things from childhood came up where I was extra triggered by him, and we had to kind of, you're gonna hold the bottle that way, you're gonna talk that way, you're gonna, but you gotta dig in and do that work so you can be normal like the rest of the world. But yeah, I mean, it's a process and it's an ongoing process. And I think that's important to emphasize because a lot of people think there's the end goal of healing is I will never be triggered again and I will never have these issues again. And the truth of the matter is, it's like you shouldn't be aiming for that. You should be aiming for increasing your capacity for what you can hold, what you can carry, and what you can navigate. You should be increasing your awareness. Don't look at it as getting rid of these things. Look at it as resourcing yourself and supporting yourself more. And when you shift that mindset from, I gotta get to this finish line and eliminate these triggers and work through all my trauma, and sadly, that's a lot of people's messaging online. You will release all your trauma in so many days, or you will be healed. And it's like, healing is subjective and it's an ongoing process. And even if you're not in therapy and you're not actively doing it, it's happening regardless because life makes it happen and relationships make it happen. And it's just a matter of whether you're aware and you're willing to learn and grow, or you're like some people we know who are in denial and dig into what is most comfortable and familiar because the alternative is too triggering and too scary, and they don't resource themselves differently.
Yeah, I think so much of it is a big sign of progress and growth is that when that window of being able to recognize like that I'm triggered or what I'm triggered by as that gets smaller, and like, and then when you're able to have those moments where like you're able to recognize it in the moment,
You're able to recognize it in the moment and you know what to do for yourself. And you're not panic, or, oh my God, I don't know what's happening in my body right now. When you have that attunement to your body, so you know what it feels like for you when you start to get activated and you know exactly how to show up for yourself. That's a sign you're healing.
Absolutely. I'm curious about, because I do think that this is so important for those of us like healing from relational trauma. What did that self-disclosure with your fiance look like as far as like, these are my wounds or these are my triggers or, this is my past experience from relationships. Like, I think that in order, I mean, obviously there's like, trauma dumping. But at the same time, I do think like it is really important to like lay it out on the table.
Yeah, it wasn't the first date, and it wasn't, like I'll have people ask me, like, how soon should I share with someone? And it's like, when it's appropriate, when it comes up naturally. Like, I didn't sit down with him over dinner or drinks the first 5 times we met and go, let me tell you about all the times I was abused, right? Like, that's not what happened. It was more like we naturally got to know each other and started dating. And when situations happened with us, if I acted funny or I felt like I was getting uncomfortable, I wanted and I highly value honest relationships. And so I was going to act in alignment with what I value and have integrity there. So I was just very transparent and forthcoming and said, listen, it's really important to me to have honest, open conversations with people in my life. I respect that not everybody is fully comfortable doing that, but this is what is important to me. And that is what also a boundary sounds like, you know? And I think people fail to realize that as well, is that sometimes your boundaries are woven into these natural conversations you're having where you say, this is what I need and this is what I want and this is what I value, and I can share with you why. And if you're not comfortable, that's okay. I respect you and I respect that, but some things will change for me. And we had a ton of those and still do, you know, like I said, more is added to your plate. Life changes for us a kid. And now we have to have conversations around, well, what do you value about raising, you know, a child a certain way? And what do you value about screen time? And what do you value about nutrition? And blah, 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 right? But at the start, no, I mean, I wasn't like, hey, I've had years of trauma and abuse. No,
I've just, I've
never.
never been in a healthy relationship in my life, let me tell
No.
you.
And I think what's also key here is that you want to share that. You just want to share it when it makes sense to share it. And so if you're sitting down and you're having to concoct the conversation in your head and be like, when can I insert this in? We're chatting about the new movie on Netflix or something. And how can I insert this into the character reminds me of my abusive ex. Like, no, don't, no. When it makes sense, when there's a situation between you, when they have a misstep and there's an open door to have a conversation that is a little more vulnerable. That's where you insert that. And I think that's where people struggle because they don't want to go to that vulnerable place. And when some they want to avoid the misstep. So they want to be like, here's all my trauma. Don't do any of those things because that's going to hurt me. And you're like, that's not how this shit works. Because they are going to do some of those things and not on purpose and not to hurt you. You are responsible for how you respond to those things. And if you need to, make them aware in the moment it happens or after it happens. But, you know, have a general conversation, I would say, early on, couple of dates, weeks, or a month in about what you value, so you make sure you're on the same page. And it might naturally come up in something like that. But yeah, don't unload.
I think it's so true that I feel like it does always, the opportunity always does naturally present itself.
Yeah, it does.
Always. Somebody might be listening and saying, like, share what you value. Somebody might be thinking, what the hell does that even mean?
Yeah, I know. Most people don't understand what a value is, and so the best way to explain this is, what do you need or want? And when I'm talking about values specifically in this context, I'm speaking behaviorally. How do you want to be treated? What makes you feel safe? What makes you feel heard? What makes you feel seen? What makes you feel respected? That is the behavior that you value. And the opposite of that, I run every client who needs to do boundary work through this specific exercise. The opposite of that behavior that you value is the behavior you don't value. If I value open, honest, and transparent communication because it makes me feel respected, it makes me feel seen, it makes me feel heard, it makes me feel understood, then I don't value someone who is dishonest, who lacks transparency, who lacks openness, who is confusing, who is inconsistent in their communication. I don't value that. Anything you don't value behaviorally, you need a boundary around. Because when it comes at you and you're exposed to it, it's harmful to you in some way, shape, or form. Maybe it confuses you. Maybe it makes you feel insecure. Maybe it makes you feel anxious. Whatever it is, it's a negative. And that impact is going to affect how you show up in that relationship and how you feel overall about yourself and about the safety and the support with them. So it comes down to what do you respect, what do you want, and what do you need in terms of behavior. And I always tell people, start, if you're going to do this for yourself and you want to identify it, start with everything you don't like behaviorally. Make a whole list of the behaviors that are harmful to you. I don't like when someone raises their voice when they're angry. And somebody else that might be neutral to them. This is why this is so crucial. For someone else, that might be like, I was raised in an Italian family and we're really enthusiastic and it sounds like we're yelling, but we're really not. And it's like, cool. Respect, I don't want it around me.
Respect.
I don't want it around me.
Turn the
I
volume down.
am, yeah, I speak like this. You won't know I'm angry unless I actually tell you I'm angry because this is what I sound like when I'm angry. And that's me. And I know that that might be rare in another person, but that is what I value. And that is what I want coming at me.
So, what do you want to shill, push, promote? What do you have going on? Sell it, baby.
I don't have a specific service that I am promoting right now. I'm always kind of promoting everything in general. So I will lay that out for everybody. One, I am currently accepting new clients for the remainder of the year with my one-on-one services. You can find that information at the link right in my Instagram bio or right on my website at amyfiedler.com. I have one-on-one email support and I do one-on-one calls with people all over the world, so you are not hindered to one location if you work with me. And I have my online courses. So if you're somebody who's like, I don't have time for calls, or, and this is a lot of people, I am in therapy and I like my therapist, but they're not teaching me tools, go to my courses. I have a boundary setting for trauma survivors course. I have a rebuilding self-trust course. I have a reclaiming your inner voice course. And there's a few others there, but those are really the core foundational ones that I push and tell people you need these tools to be able to have healthy, safe relationships with people. So if that's you, those are all lifetime access. They're all pre-recorded. You can take your time and I took them myself, so they're good.
Well, I hope you know, and I think sometimes it's hard for it to sink in, but you're doing really amazing work and you're helping a lot of people.
Thank you. I
I really
appreciate that a
mean
lot.
that. I know that sometimes it's hard for it to sink in and to really feel it, but you're really doing phenomenal, phenomenal work. You're doing what you're meant to do.
Thank you. I mean, I'm getting teary-eyed, but you can't tell. Just
No,
like
I
when I'm
mean it.
angry, you can't tell.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks,
No,
Chloe.
it's a very appreciated compliment.
It's hard for it to sink in, so I know I don't let it, I don't think about it as much as I should, so.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.